Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, September 17th. We're back from a three-day weekend. No, it wasn't an official three-day weekend, but it was for us.
Yeah, it was for us.
Because sometimes we just don't like to sit in traffic on Monday.
How was your week, Sam?
Weekend's quiet as
all. The Comedy Store, at the Laugh Factory. Yesterday was an amazing lineup. It was mostly women, half Jewish, half Muslim.
Really?
Yeah.
And that was interesting.
They were all amazing.
Really?
Really funny women. Very, very funny women. Oh. It was a great crowd. And the crowd was also, it was very diverse, and the women killed it.
Really?
It was really nice to see a show that was mostly women, and they're all just killing it. Yeah. But I am curious, Sam.
Yeah.
Did you or did you not get the I-8?
No, not this past week. It's scheduled for this week, so I'll tell you about it after I do. But this is the BMW I want to rent, which is like a dream car. And we're going to do probably this coming weekend, so we'll see. Then I'll tell you the story.
Yeah, I want to see pictures. Yeah.
I'll have to update you as far as to how many women we attracted with that car.
Are you going to get the puppy too?
No puppy.
Enough with the
puppies, you know. I mean, that's for another time, you know.
You know, I saw my friend the other day, and he told me he was dog sitting because his friend was like, "Oh, I got this puppy. Would you mind to do me a favor?" And he thought, "Oh, great, a puppy. That's always, you know, a great woman catcher too. And I'll make a favor for my friend, right?"
Right.
And he said the dog was so ugly. It had a hump in the back. It was so.
Oh,
it was like
dog.
I was like, so wait. So the dog didn't attract ladies? Like, not this dog.
Really? Oh my God. Okay. Well, I guess some dogs have it harder than others. You know, what can you do? You know. In a couple minutes, we do have a guest in the studio. She'll be joining us, and we'll be talking about interesting things. And today, especially, the traffic was horrendous in the morning. And I'm like, you know, I can't deal with this anymore. So every time I drive on the freeway, I'm like fantasizing, where am I going to move, you know? And now I'm planning a trip maybe to Washington after I've been to Oregon. I want to check out Washington State because it's just as beautiful. You know, they're saying the Northwest is the most beautiful part of the country.
I've never been. I'm dying to
go. Yeah, you got to go, man. I mean, if you like nature, that's the place to go.
I love nature.
Yeah.
There's such a harmony. Like, you just go in there and you're like, I know who I am.
I mean, waterfalls and rivers and streams and all that. It was just amazing.
Well, let me tell you something.
Right.
I can't do, like, if they say there's, like, a hike, I can only do the hike if there's some sort of a water, you know, attraction at the end. A waterfall, a river. If there's no water involved, I'm not walking.
You're not going anywhere. Yeah. I know, I'm pretty much like too, and the hike better be like less than a mile.
Or yeah, I'm like, no, yeah, not today. I need to jump into something needs to happen,
right.
You know, water related.
Right.
I
got to tell you, when I was in Oregon the last time, I went into the woods and got lost.
What?
And the smart guy that I am, I didn't take a picture of the trails when I entered. They had a little sign with the trails, right?
Uh-huh.
So I'm walking there, and the trails have names. They have like signs, like street signs.
Yeah.
But it means nothing. How do I get out of here? I was so,
like, by
I was
this
stuck.
Rock, turn right, and this rock, turn left.
But there's no rocks. It was all like growth and trees.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So a lot of greenery. It was beautiful, like being lost in paradise or something, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do. I started freaking out because you start heading where you think you parked your car, but it just meanders around, you know, and you don't know where you're going. So I started freaking out. The GPS doesn't really know trails, unmarked trails or anything, you know. So luckily, so I started freaking out a little bit. And then this woman came by with a couple dogs. And I said, "You must be familiar with the area. How do I get out?" She said, "Just go there. Follow the trail." So I did. And I'm walking around for another about 10, 15 minutes. Then I run into her again with her dogs.
Oh, you
I'm
walk like, in circles.
Yeah, I said, I must be walking in circles here.
It's very easy so walking in circles.
She guided me out.
Yeah, when everything but, looks the same.
But it shows you should never, when you're, well, I don't know how this would have helped if I had another person with me, but usually with hiking, you don't want to go alone, you know. All these stories of lost hikers, they're always like alone.
Hey,
you know, so.
I one time got lost in a mall parking lot.
You got a problem. Don't go in nature then.
I am the last person that needs to go on.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
I have read, did you hear about this? Ohio man calls police, accuses them of stealing his weed, and then demands they return it.
He stole his weed.
It's a quote. So it's a quote. From what I know, 100 grams is cool, right? Am I wrong? The cop on the other end replied, "You are wrong."
Yeah. It's too much. More than they're probably permitted to. And yeah, and right before we get to our guest also, Rick Ocasek from The Cars died, and he was 75. They're saying it was of heart disease. So yeah, you get older, you get all kinds of things, you know?
Yeah.
Not fun getting older, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to bring on our guest right now who's sitting here patiently, and she's going to join us for a nice conversation. We're joined by Erin Buchanan, right? Mm-hmm. Welcome to the show, Erin.
Thank you guys so much.
Of course, we didn't know who was coming because the publicist probably named like five different people who would be coming. But I realized the last one was Erin. So I thought, okay, it's Erin. Yeah. Very well. And so welcome to the show. Did you have to drive far this morning? Did you have to deal with traffic?
A little traffic. I was just in Burbank. So
Not too bad at all. Yeah.
And I actually used to live literally down the street.
Really?
So
a lot of people say that it's like everybody used to live down the street. But it's cool. So did you grow up here in LA or
no? I'm actually originally from New Jersey.
Oh really?
Yeah. And so I'm a transplant.
When did you move here?
2015. So
about
4.5 years.
Yeah. Oh wow. Yeah. And what did you do in New Jersey?
Lots of things. I was in New Jersey for some work stuff. And then prior to that, I was in school in London. I lived in London, actually, for about 5 years. And moved out here because I wanted to try somewhere where it didn't rain and snow.
So you've only lived in New Jersey and London, right? Or have you been in other places?
Yeah, they're kind of similar.
Very similar.
New Jersey has a summer, though.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like London, it's always cold in London.
Depends. You know what? It is. It's cold, it's rainy, it's dreary, but not all the time. Like
they have a summer, right?
They do. They have a summer, they have a beautiful spring.
Yeah.
And fall.
Yeah.
And the winters aren't as harsh as our winters in New Jersey.
Yeah, yeah. And what made you move to London then and live there?
I went back to school there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, went to graduate school there.
Really?
Yeah.
Which one?
The University of Essex.
Oh, okay. That sounds good.
Yeah, it's one of the best universities.
I don't know their colleges, but I figured, you know, you go there, you want to go to a good school, you know.
Good for you.
Yeah. And what were you going there for? What were you studying?
You know, it's funny enough. I used to be an actor, like everybody here, really? I think.
Everybody, that's how they start sending this here. I used to be an actor.
In a previous life.
So I went back to school for acting.
Oh, nice.
And stayed in London and was an actor there for a few years. And
Wow. What did you do? Theater?
Theater. Yeah, I only did theater.
Yeah, that's what everybody in London does when they act. It's like less movies, more theater. Here it's the other way around.
A total opposite here.
Yeah. Everybody's with their movies and everything. Very nice. So 4 years, did you like it there while you were there?
Oh, absolutely. I loved it. I wanted to stay. I didn't marry a prince, so I couldn't stay. They kicked me out.
I see. So you got to marry a prince.
That's the rule. You have to marry a prince or else you have to leave.
Yeah. So you came back here.
I came back, and then I thought I'd give it a try out here in LA. Mm-hmm. And not really sure what the plan was. And then very quickly, after I moved here, I started grant writing for a similar nonprofit to the one I currently work for, that works with foster youth, and I fell in love with it.
Really?
And sort of, haven't looked back.
Really?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Did you ever have that urge to work in things like that, to do things like that, like work with...
Yeah, I think I always really wanted to do something that was very service-oriented.
Yeah.
And, you know, years ago when I was in college, I had worked in the special school district in the town where I grew up, which deals with, you know, children who have... physical and mental challenges. And so I owe that sort of population of disadvantaged children in some way or another had always sort of tugged at my heartstrings.
God bless you, you know, because not everybody's like that, you know, where they feel they have to be of service to other people. Mm-hmm. Well, not that they have to, but that's what they want to do, you know, and not many people are like that, you know. Many people are more like self-centered, not in a bad way, you know, but it just, you don't think about these things,
right,
you know.
Right.
Yeah. Very cool. So tell us what it is that you do now so people will know why they should be sitting here and listening for
absolutely
50 minutes, because we haven't really introduced you and what you do.
So I work for First Star, which is a nonprofit based here in Los Angeles, and we run college prep programs for aged foster youth.
Ah, so you prepare them for college?
We prepare them for college.
Wow.
Yeah,
and they are—it's
an amazing organization.
Yeah.
Our local academy here is run through UCLA,
mm-hmm.
But we have 13 other academies across the country, and we are growing. Every year. So
how long has this been around?
So First Star, we're celebrating our 20th anniversary, actually, as an organization. Started in 1999.
Uh-huh.
Originally, we worked with policy reform in Washington, D.C., and so it wasn't really direct services back then.
I see.
And so over the last 20 years, we've morphed into an organization that really now focuses on these college prep programs.
Who teaches the kids? Is it volunteers?
No, I mean, sometimes there are. Basically, what we do is we partner with a university. So we partnered with, the first one was UCLA back in 2011. And they actually, the program is run through the university. So we hire a director, and we get about 30 kids at a time who are going into ninth grade.
Uh-huh.
And they are... the only requirement is that they have to have an open case, so they have to be in the system.
Mm-hmm.
And we recruit them through their schools, through their social workers, and they come together for 4 whole years. So it's a long-term 4-year program. Once they become part of our family, the First Star family, we don't let go of them.
Really?
And so no matter what happens, so if they're adopted, if they are reunited with family, doesn't matter. We keep them. We are committed to making sure that they graduate high school and go on to higher education.
Wow. That's important. Yeah, because that's really where we need to invest our money, you know, in the youth, because if they don't get educated and they don't know what they're doing and they don't mature when they're older, we're going to be in big trouble. Their whole generation is going to be in trouble, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it's already been proven beyond any doubt that education is probably one of the most important things to determine the success of a society, you know, in general.
Yeah.
The whole future, when we're going to be old.
Yeah.
And they'll run things over here. You
don't want someone who dropped out at ninth grade, you know, to run the country. That's for sure, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. But it changes their whole future, right?
Oh,
it changes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's amazing. I mean, the statistics are horrible, as you can imagine.
Right.
For kids who age out of the system. And, you know, this is something that I think, you know, for me, as somebody who grew up in a, you know, quote unquote, normal home, college was always sort of an expected thing, you know, like, oh, yeah, after I graduate from high school, I will go on to college or something, or, you know, vocational school, whatever. And just so many of so many of our students just don't have that. They don't have somebody who forged that path before them.
Right.
And so it's not even an option.
Right.
For them.
There's no like role model or anybody that will guide them through it, that will tell them, take a look at college, you know?
Right. And so our founder, Peter Samuelson, who started First Star back in 1999, his idea was, what is the best place to show these youth that they belong on a college campus? Put them on a college campus.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Show them that this is normal. You can do this.
Right.
You know, there's kids who look like you, who sound like you, who are from the same, you know, parts of the city that you're from, who go to these major universities, UCLA.
Wow, wow.
I think, you know.
I think that's like the also the key to, because it's not just about the education. You say make them feel like they belong somewhere. Mm-hmm. So it's about the home. Because when a child, he can learn and stuff like that. But when they feel like such an outsider and such an outcast and they don't have any grounds, even if you try to teach them, the emotionally they're, you know. So I feel like it's probably the combination of like you belong here, you have a home with us, and the education they give them, right?
Yeah, it's and it's also the other big part of it too, is that we create a family with them.
Right.
So when we bring around 30 kids at a time, they become siblings. You know, it's like they're brothers and sisters, and they help each other through it. And you know, and the program is academically based. Of course, we want them to graduate high school. We want to prepare them for college, but it's also about life skills. It's about teaching them about how to speak for themselves, to advocate for themselves. You know, financial security. Wow. And
that's
health.
More than parents do, you know?
No, I mean, it's a lot more than my parents.
That's what they're, I'm saying. Sometimes, sometimes you need to give a child that stability for them to even have the mindset to go to school. And, and they have to be calm. Something about them needs to be calm, like their grounds for them to even, you know, put their mind into it.
That's such a good point. Yeah.
Especially when they grew up with adversity for the most part, you know, and it's in tough life and things like that. Mm. So this is mainly like foster children, or do you do
foster youth? Yeah.
Foster youth.
That's the only requirement.
So so they are like, now what's like a foster child? Does that mean they go from one home to another? Or not necessarily, maybe
not
sometimes
necessarily.
Just one home?
Yeah, I mean, it's just sort of, it's a case-by-case basis. I mean, right here in Los Angeles, we unfortunately have the largest population of foster youth in the country.
Really?
There's about 28,000 kids in the system.
28,000?
In LA County.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's for lots of different reasons that kids are taken out of the home. Sometimes it's, you know, unfortunately, abuse and neglect.
Right.
Sometimes it's poverty-based. And it's not always, you know, a permanent. Some kids are taken out of the home temporarily, and they're reunited with a family member, with a cousin, with a grandparent. And so a lot of our kids, you know, that is the case for them. They live with a relative.
Right.
But then there are, you know, there's a large percentage of them also live in group homes or have had multiple placements in different foster homes.
Wow, that's got to be for a kid. Huh?
Yeah, it's growing horrific,
up.
Really.
Yeah. So now, so you felt sort of like something pulling you into it and stuff, right? Which is, it's amazing, you know? I mean, you're dealing with education and welfare of kids and stuff, you know? And I can't imagine of anything more noble than that. So that's good that you found your calling and things like that.
It's a privilege, really.
Yeah, you know? So. But you grew up differently, right? Do you have any siblings or?
Yep, I've got one younger brother. Uh-huh. Two parents. You know, like I said before, I grew up in a very normal, quote unquote, home. You know,
right?
We had a dog,
and that's interesting because usually people that would get into it are probably people that have also had a hard life, and they.
Yeah.
And they get into it, but you came out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, came into it out of something totally different.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, I think, I think that was some of that was instilled from my parents. You know, my father was a deacon, a Catholic deacon, and he was very religious. My parents are very religious, which is great. But they were our growing up. It was always we were always very service oriented.
Right.
What can you do for other people and things? So I really thank them for that.
Yeah, very nice. You see, that's how you got to raise your kids, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Care about other people.
That's
you know?
Right.
We don't see enough of that.
these are the nice parts of religion, of almost any religion.
Absolutely.
The giving part, the knowing that you are part of something bigger. That's when religion is so healthy.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I agree. You know, I mean, I think there's a place for religion. It makes people a little more compassionate. But I guess that's an argument for another day, right?
I know, right? Oh, gosh, that's a can of worms.
Right here, in fact, we forgot to bring this up, totally unrelated. But there are the elections in Israel today.
Today.
And this is like the biggest. I mean, it's really big because it's really a fight, really, between the secular people and the people that want to add some more religion into or customs, whatever, you know. But so it's really between the religious and the
democracy,
secular.
Really.
Yeah, but
the
modern
advanced progress.
Right.
Because it's so interesting. Israel, in such a small place, it has so many extreme cultures. Because from one side, you got the Hasidic Jews that they do and practice their thing. From the other part, it's one of the largest gay parade, for example,
right.
Tel Aviv.
Right.
So, and it's such a small place, so many different kind of cultures live and coexist, really. And today,
right, which is cool, but it makes politics pretty hard, you know.
Gosh.
Everybody's pulling a different way.
Yeah.
But since you mentioned religion, that just reminded me of that. But so you grew up in a religious home, huh?
I did.
Was that like?
Yeah.
I mean, could you like not do anything?
No, I mean, I think... We were very strict. We were very strict about things, about TV especially.
Oh, wow. But it couldn't have hurt you, right? I mean, it didn't hurt you. You didn't watch much TV.
I really am glad I grew up in that kind of a environment. I mean, it was a very loving, strict home, you know. But
especially in light of all the technology today, you start appreciating all the human interactions you had when you were growing up.
I'm actually glad I did not grow up in a time with that. There were no cell phones. There was no internet. There was no, like,
I know.
You just went outside and figured out how to have fun.
I know.
A stick or something.
And today's
kids
probably wondering, how could I even live without this?
No,
I can't imagine a world without
this. I'll tell you
this.
What. Today, it's so much quicker to make a fatal mistake.
Right.
A mistake is a click away. I was a child, let's say, want to take some pictures. They had steps to it. You need to go and you need to develop the picture. The guy who develops the film is going to see the pictures that you want to send. Now you can just send a picture of yourself to some kid, and then all the kids, you know?
Yeah. They do a lot worse things.
I don't know what they do, but I'm saying it's much easier to embarrass yourself.
Yeah.
No, of course. I agree with you. I agree. Yeah. I mean, the technology has turned us into something totally different. I think we're going to be a different species in like a couple hundred years or so,
or
1,000 years. I don't know, but how long it takes. But yeah, I mean, I'm reading a lot about the future and stuff, and they talk about, you know, machines really being so smart that it's going to be a different world, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know if I want to be alive during that time. I'll just be looking from upstairs.
A lot of jobs are going to be, you know, canceled.
Right, but there'll be new ones. I'm never worried about that, because with technology, they always say, oh, it's going to kill all these jobs, but people get retrained and stuff, you know?
Is that something that you guide the kids of, like, what kind of a thing to learn in college, or it's totally up to them?
Oh, no. I mean, that is absolutely part of it, too. And I think we also, I mean, college is always the goal.
Mm-hmm.
But we also realize that sometimes college isn't for everybody, you know. And so the majority of our kids go on to 4-year or 2-year colleges. But there are some that go into the military, that go into a vocational trade, or seek employment right after graduation.
Right.
But when they do go on to college, the transition period is, we're very much a part of that, and making sure that they go to a university that has resources for them.
Right.
Like UCLA has one of the best programs. It's called the Bruin Guardian Scholars, and they are former foster youth who are current UCLA students.
Wow.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
And so our mentors, our peer mentors, because the kids live on campus every summer for about a month throughout high school. Mm. And then they come onto campus one Saturday each month during the academic year. And so their peer mentors are students who are current UCLA students, who are, most of whom are former foster youth themselves.
Right. And they probably, some of them have been through your program too.
Some of them have. Yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
So,
that's awesome that you can place, kids like that and stuff. I did want to ask, would you happen to know what's the ratio between boys and girls? Is it pretty much even?
Yeah, it's kind of even. It kind of depends on, like I said before, we have 13 different academies at 13 different universities across the country.
Yeah,
right now,
that's a lot.
Which is pretty amazing, yeah. And it depends on each region. It kind of depends on what the landscape is. But it's very even. I think some of them, we tend to have a little bit more females to males, but it is pretty even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I guess life is pretty equal and it's you know, and yeah. the way it hands out life to people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's just tough for you all the way. And sometimes, you know, you find somebody who reaches out to you and gives you a hand. You know, I mean, this yeah. is like an amazing thing because sometimes through this program, they get much farther than kids from healthy homes or normal homes
absolutely.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You give an equal opportunity to somebody that their life was going down.
Right.
You know.
Right. And you give them an opportunity. I'm sure they appreciate it a lot more than the ones where their parents paid $50,000 to get them to college,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
What do you think about that? I mean, that probably happens a lot, though, right? Just people are not getting caught.
I know.
Right? And trying to get their kids into school.
Is she going to court? They took her to court, right?
Yeah, she got only
penalty.
7 or 14 days in jail, right?
And then, which is so crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm telling you, this is LA. You're going to see her book coming out. She's gonna be in some show.
Oh yeah, I can't wait for the TV movie about all this.
Yeah, she's right? gonna star in some kind of documentary, and you know, it's LA.
Yeah,
you see, that's the exact opposite of what you guys do.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah. It is literally
the flip side of it, right?
The opposite of what we do. I mean, that's why I think we were all just so appalled by that.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and I feel bad for the kids because often the kids probably barely understood what their parents are doing, you know, and these kids would not have succeeded in a school where they're not qualified to be, you know, because they're like, they're going to fall behind. They'll be depressed.
Yeah.
They'll feel left out. And so nobody wins in that situation, you know?
Right.
It's just the parents are like, oh, look, my son's going to USC.
Yeah,
you
right.
know?
I know. And that's for what? It's like some kind of weird status.
And that's LA, you know? Yeah, that's LA and being rich in LA. You can imagine people think that way. And that's terrible for the kids, I think. You know, this shows that they didn't want the best for the kids, but what's best for them.
Right.
What's best for the kids is teaching them how to work for what they want.
Because
then what happens if you kind of spoil them too much, they're going to grow up. They're not going to know how to do shit.
Yeah, right? They'll expect.
They won't know the word. They don't know. It's actually damaging the child because they think the world is this way, and at some point the parents do live them,
right?
Because they're like, all right, you in your 20s or in your 30s, leave me the hell alone. But the child is like, I don't know what to do. And that's how you get 34 35 year old children that still live off the parents,
right?
Yeah,
and that happens a lot, you know. Yeah,
and they don't do much. I wanted to ask you this. I was in volunteering in Israel with a very similar thing, kids that was removed from their home. And I know many of these kids, like I met a girl that she was abused by the stepdad and they have to remove her from the home. And I'm wondering, do you offer these children also psychological service? Because from knowing this girl, I was like, there's no way she can even get on to even learn anything if you don't help her with what she's gone through in her whole childhood.
Yeah. We definitely do our best with that. I think, you know, there are definitely unfortunately, some mental health issues that, you know, we're not equipped to deal with.
Right.
But I think, you know, one of the things that each academy's director really tries to do, a lot of it is case management and reaching out to their caregivers, their teachers, their social workers, and making sure that all of those services are in place.
Yeah.
And that they're getting the help that they need if they need it.
Yeah.
So we're definitely very active on that side.
So you're like
things.
They're angels. They're their angels.
Yeah. Actually, that's great. Yeah.
These kids, from the ones I met in Israel, they need an angel. Yeah. And it's so remarkable that that's what you guys do.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's really amazing to watch them grow, too. Like, when they come in, when they're like 13, 14, you know, and they're like no matter where you're from or who you're, you know, you have no idea who you are. You have no idea what's going to happen. And, you know, they're like, they just blossom.
Yeah.
They just absolutely blossom and flourish. And it's just...
You watch them grow in front of your eyes.
Right.
Yeah. Do you have without saying any names, a case example that was touching specifically, like it was was touching to your heart?
You know, we do have one student, he's one of our peer mentors, who went through the UCLA program all 4 years, graduated last spring, I believe. It was 2018, yes. And so he's just completed his first year at Chapman University.
Oh, wow.
Which is amazing. And, oh, I'm sorry, it's September, so he's now in his second year. I'm still in summer mode, I think. So he just started his second year, his sophomore year, and his younger brother is actually just started as a freshman in our current cohort at UCLA. So he's now counseling, his brother's
him,
year.
Yeah.
Yeah, bringing up his younger brother, too, which is amazing. And he's... they're both really special kids, and yeah, they're wonderful. So.
Amazing. The organization is called First Star. Yeah. You guys are celebrating 20 years, like you said, and you're going to have an event, right?
Yes.
A red carpet event at the Skirball Center,
yeah.
Which is beautiful. Tell us a little bit about this.
So this Sunday, the 22nd, at the Skirball Center, we are having our 20th anniversary celebration, which is a very, it's a carnival-like event. We were honoring four different people who are heroes to foster youth. Devin Alexander, who is a celebrity chef. She was the chef from Biggest Loser on NBC. I don't know if you watched that show.
We don't watch a lot of TV, no. But okay. I've heard of the Biggest
She's
Loser.
Amazing, and she just adopted a little girl from the foster care system here in LA.
Really?
So she's a huge advocate of ours and supporter of our UCLA program. And then J. Paul Deratani, who's a screenwriter, he penned a movie called Foster Boy, which is going to be released very soon. That deals with it's a fictional movie, but it's based on some of his own cases that he's tried in Chicago.
Yeah,
he's a very, very prominent litigator in Chicago.
Really, that'd be interesting to see, like, into the life of foster kids.
Yeah, it's a really, really powerful movie.
Right.
That deals with the for-profit foster care system. Which is a thing.
Right.
People making money off of foster youth.
What?
It's pretty horrible. It's not in every state, but there are for-profit foster agencies that make money by placing kids in foster care.
Right.
And as you can imagine, there's been a lot of abuse and neglect within that.
Really?
And so Jay has tried many, many different cases in Chicago and won millions and millions of dollars against some of these big for-profit agencies, and we're taking them down.
Yeah.
Is our goal.
What an insane model.
Yeah, it's pretty horrific.
Yeah. But if there's a demand for it, I guess you'd see how they can survive, you know.
Right.
Because, but that's the thing, is that maybe you're right, and people should not be motivated by profit to do these things.
Right.
You know, yeah. Yeah.
So you have many fronts. It's not just the helping the kids; you're also fighting.
There's a lot.
What's hurting them on the flip side?
And then also David Eilenberg, who's the COO of ITV America, who also works a lot with our UCLA students.
Very nice. So a lot of people really involved in this.
Yeah. So we're honoring them this weekend, and it's great. It's a really fun event. We do this almost every year.
So it's going to be like a carnival type of thing?
Is it a carnival. There's face painting. We've got a popcorn machine this year.
What?
What?
Dude, I love face painting.
Carnival games. We've got a silent auction.
Well, we got to be there.
Are the kids going to be there?
Some of our UCLA students are going to be there. We also have a couple of students from other academies.
Yeah.
Some alumni from other academies that are flying in. There's going to be some performances from our UCLA students during the actual ceremony where we give the honorees their honors, their awards, and it's really fun. It's very casual too. People bring their kids, and
She got me on face painting.
Yeah, right.
Yes. It was like the kids and the kid, and I'm like, face painting.
Face painting.
Yeah, I'll go there.
And you don't have to be a kid to get your face painted.
Very cool. So if you guys don't have anything to do on this weekend, is that Saturday or Sunday?
Sunday. From 4 to 7.
September 22nd at the Skirball. And I think pretty much everybody knows where it is. It's on top of the world here.
Yes.
When you take the 405. And so very cool. Now, I did want to ask you about the kids. Now, you don't provide, like, it's not sort of like an inpatient type of thing, right? They don't, do you provide facilities where they live too, or?
I mean, it is residential, but they live in the dorms, in UCLA's dorms, during the summer.
I see.
For about 4 weeks during the summer.
Right. And then the rest of the time they live at home with whoever's fostering them.
Right. And we transport them in from wherever they live in LA County.
Right.
One Saturday a month on campus. And they're there just for the day.
Right.
To do classes, SAT prep, and, you know, workshops and whatnot.
Right. So when you are in the foster system, why do people prefer to foster as opposed to adopt someone? Is that like less of a commitment or something?
And I think, sometimes there's different motivations for that. I think sometimes, people will foster because it's a temporary thing because there's some kind of emergency situation where the kid needs to be taken out of the home immediately and they need somewhere to go.
Right.
And, you know, so there's a lot of people who do that, and they're just sort of temporary places for kids to be for a week, for a few months or whatever.
Right.
But there's a lot of people out there that do foster to adopt. And so they'll foster youth and then with the intent of adopting them. Wow. But it takes a while. I mean, the system, it takes a while for kids, for their cases to be resolved in some way. You know,
really?
I think it's difficult for the parental rights of the biological parent to finally be terminated. So there's a whole process.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
And things,
sometimes the parents fight for it, even though.
Oh yeah, and sometimes it's we're living in an age where we have an opioid crisis going on, and so there's a lot of areas of this country where that's the reason why, unfortunately, their kids are being taken to their home. It's through because of their
they have an addiction.
Drug addiction. Yeah, and you hear stories all the time of people who get clean and get their lives back and get their kids back.
Oh, right.
You know, and so that can happen.
Yeah,
Is that the reason? Doesn't always happen, but
is that the reason that they don't terminate so easily? So,
right,
because just to give the parents another chance to maybe sober up and try to claim their child back. Does that happen often? Like, what's the?
You know, actually, that's a really good question, and I don't know what the sort of national statistic is on those rates of getting kids back or terminating rights or whatever.
Yeah.
I do know that, unfortunately, it more often than not, they don't get their kids back, which is really heartbreaking.
That's true, yeah.
But the good thing is that you're like, whether they get the kids back or not, we're going to make sure they're going to have a college education.
So
they're in charge of their future, because sometimes they can get kids back and they're going to the same, they have some sort of leverage for their life.
Right.
You know?
And they need support. The whole family needs support. You know, it's the whole we call it the whole scholar approach. And that means sort of, we call our kids scholars.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, we look at the big picture.
Right.
You know,
cause they're not in a vacuum. There's people around them, the situation,
right.
All that stuff. So,
Right.
Now, are there, special needs kids too, that you guys take? Like,
do you mean like
learning disabilities, things like that. So everybody.
Yeah, it's a case by case. And when kids come in, we don't look at sort of what their academics are when they come in. We don't, there's no sort of test you have to take.
Right.
Because a lot of times their academic, their grades at school are not reflective of how smart they are
do,
or what
right.
they're capable of at all. It's usually based on the fact that they haven't been able to complete homework assignments because they just, were moved to a different house and a different school.
That's true. That's another thing.
Yeah. It's really about their desire to want, to want to do it.
Right.
Regardless of what their GPA is.
Exactly. Yeah. So they do. So I guess it makes it easier when they're and they want to do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, do some kids end up going there reluctantly?
Well, I mean, that's a great question, because I think it is a college prep program, and I think when their teachers or their social workers present it to them, there is an application that they have to fill out, and there's an interview and whatnot,
right,
that they have to want to do it,
right?
You know, and if they don't want to do it, that's okay too.
Exactly,
you know,
go do it your way to see how that works out for you.
Yeah.
Very nice. So you guys are really doing a commendable thing. I'm really glad you came in. It's very inspiring.
Yeah, me too. Thank you so much.
It's called First Star Academy Program. Now, if people want to, if people are interested, how do they contact you? How do they contact the organization?
Yeah, you can go our website. It's really easy. It's www.firststar.org. And you can find all the information you could possibly need on our website.
Right.
And our email is info@firststar.org.
Sounds
good. If you're interested in emailing.
And as far as your event, do people need to get tickets?
You do have to buy tickets. And if you go to our website, there's a whole page where you can.
Okay. Well, firststar.org, folks. That's where you go.
Firststar.org.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
What's
me too.
Do you guys have any plans as far as adding more
where
things?
Where we go from here?
Where are you going from here?
Well, we can actually finally talk about this. Really exciting news this year. Governor Newsom added us to the California state budget back in June.
Wow.
And so we have been awarded quite a large amount of money to start another academy at Sacramento State University. And the idea is the big goal is to have a First Star Academy at every state school in California.
Oh wow!
So we're going to roll out our plan right now is to roll out more academies, about 12 more academies over the next 5 or 6 years.
Really?
But that's
a lot of work.
Wow. So it's going to be a lot. It's going to be a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
You're going to have a lot of kids.
Yeah. But we're doing it. We are doing it. First Star is going to be on every college campus in the country before you know it. So.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. And do you ever So right now you have a program at UCLA, right?
Yeah, that's our only one here.
That's the only one
right now
in Southern California, would you say? Or?
No, we do. We have CSU San Bernardino is another one.
All right.
And we have plans with this new Newsom initiative. We're looking at a few more campuses here in Los Angeles and Southern California.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, Erin Buchanan, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's been such a pleasure meeting you.
Of course. Everybody check it out. September 22nd, the event over at the Skirball.
Yeah.
And there's going to be red carpet and several celebrities too,
yes,
I think.
Yes,
so.
We do. We've got a few celebrity ambassadors. Emma Hunton, who is on the new show Good Trouble, which is a spinoff of The Fosters. If you watch that show, which is about foster youth.
Yeah. That's interesting. I like to watch that now that we've been introduced to this.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great show.
Yeah.
And then Tamin Sirsak, who was on Pretty Little Liars. I don't know if you watched that.
We don't watch TV.
No, I know. I'm sorry.
But I've heard of the show. But that's okay. Our listeners know who you're talking about.
That was a moment of like, yeah.
I know. Yeah. She's like, I'm trying to drop some names and these guys are not impressed.
And Sam and I are like, no.
Dead, just deadpan.
Yeah,
nothing.
Not impressed. But no, we admire everybody that comes to that's part of the organization. It's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
And we thank you guys for doing this because somebody has to.
Absolutely.
And you took on that responsibility and a lot of admiration to you. So thank you again. You guys check it out. Go to
First
Star. You see, that's what happens when you move away your notes.
Firststar.org,
and you'll find out all the information there.
Yes.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Orr.
Thank you, Sam.
And you're preparing for a trip?
Yes.
Are you ready for it?
I'm going to see my mom on Thursday in Miami. Me and my sister are going, and I'm claustrophobic, but she said it's one of the biggest ships in the world.
Which one are you going on? Do you know?
I don't know, but I was giving her trouble a little bit. And she's like, I gave you a room with
you
a balcony.
You don't know. Oh, well, that's nice. You see? There you go. I mean, if you go in the inside rooms, you go claustrophobic big time. So if you're going to have a balcony.
That's why I was not into it in the beginning. She was like, okay, I got you.
But wait a minute. You don't know what ship you're going on? How is that possible?
I don't know. She just said it's so big they have waves there.
They have waves.
They have like a wave. I don't know.
Well, they have waves in the ocean, period. What's so unusual about
that? No, they
have
waves on the ship. Do you understand this? They're surrounded by waves. It was like, let's have one more on the ship. Like, it's humans are crazy.
Okay. All right. Well, Erin, thank you again.
Thank you, guys.
Laura, thank you all. And we'll see you all tomorrow.
listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.